Thank you, Andrea. Next, we will hear from Carolyn Eichner. Carolyn received her PhD from UCLA and is associate professor in the departments of history and women's and gender studies since 2008 at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and is currently chair of women's and gender studies. She was also in residence in 2015-16 at the Institute for Advanced Studies. Carolyn is the author of many articles and a monograph, Surmounting the Barricades, Women in the Paris Commune, which was published by Indiana in 2004. Carolyn is currently working on two monographs, one on gendered citizenship, identity, and the name, and the other tentatively titled Feminism's Empire. It is from this project that she will speak with us today on feminism's others, gender, race, and Frenchness in late 19th century metropole and empire.
Hi, thank you, Cheryl. I'm extremely pleased to be participating in this panel in honor of Eleanor and her work. Eleanor has served as an exceptionally generous, kind, and inspiring mentor and intellectual role model for me for much of my career and really reaching back to when I was a grad student at UCLA. Her work and ideas on the new biography fundamentally shaped the way that I rethought and remolded my somewhat incoherent dissertation into a hopefully more coherent book centered on the lives of three feminists. Eleanor's work on Nellie Roussel in the brilliant and beautiful Blessed Motherhood, Bitter Fruit, stands as a model of how to critically and narratively represent the intersections of a radical feminist woman's intimate and political lives. I've returned to this book again and again in my current work on feminism and imperialism. Additionally, Eleanor's contribution to the groundbreaking Gender and the Politics of Social Reform in France forms a vital guide to recognizing and examining the deeply gendered and class-based formulation of Republican ideology specifically and state policy more broadly. I'm deeply honored to be able to present this paper, which hopefully does some justice to these influences. Eleanor has profoundly affected and fashioned feminist, women's, gender, social, and political histories and the history of sexuality, and I'm probably leaving off some subfields there. My debt to her for being an inspiration, a tireless supporter and guide is immense. And equally important, I'm proud to call Eleanor my friend, a role that she fills with warmth and sincerity and grace. Quote, crossing the Rocky Mountains, the feminist travel writer Olympe Audoix wrote in 1871, one finds oneself in Utah, a state colonized by the followers of Brigham Young. Frenchmen, unhappily for French women, also support polygamy. For those tempted to join the Latter-day Saints in order to benefit from this institution, I give a little charitable advice. In Salt Lake City, a man must feed all of the women he marries. Wives have the right of divorce, but the husband does not. He must give his name and bread to all of his children. Frenchmen, so accustomed to taking pleasures without any inconveniences, would undoubtedly miss the Napoleonic Code, which grants men complete impunity for all of their bad passions. Close quote. In this passage from her account, A Travers l'Amérique, États-Unis, Audoix likened French men's lack of fidelity to a kind of polygamy, while mocking their lack of responsibility for their sexual behavior. Her stark set of comparisons cataloged the marital obligations Mormon men had that French men did not, and the rights that Mormon women had that French women lacked. She underscored that in terms of marriage, the French state required of men distinctly fewer responsibilities than did the polygamous Mormon society. Similarly, it granted women fewer rights than did the Latter-day Saints. In certain ways, Edouard contended, the Napoleonic Code undercut monogamy, enabling a sort of French polygamy at a time when France allowed literal polygamy in its colonies. Beginning in the 1860s, Edouard voyaged through the Ottoman and Russian empires to, quote, America, the Kingdom of the Mormons, the European Turkey, and the Asian Turkey, Egypt, Syria, Palestine, Algeria, Italy, England, and Germany, close quote. A prolific and widely recognized author and a liberal feminist, Audouin was a faithful Catholic who supported the status quo in virtually all means except gender. She was among the first of the era's French feminists to engage questions of empire as well as travel into colonial contexts. So too, beginning a decade later, was Hubertine Auclair, a Republican socialist feminist journalist and head of France's fledgling women's suffrage movement, who focused primarily on Algeria, where she lived and worked from 1888 to 1892. A third feminist of this early wave to engage with and travel into empire, Paul Manck, spent much of 1885 in Algeria. A revolutionary socialist feminist and a veteran of the 1871 Paris Commune, Manck traveled to Algeria to conduct an anti-clerical and anti-imperial propaganda tour, and also to observe colonial conditions firsthand. Feminists began from places of alterity, marginalized from dominant ideologies and power structures by both their politics and, in the case of these three activists, their gender. Feminisms provide windows into the intersections of ideology, sexuality, race, religion, culture, class, and gender, the enmeshed strands of which constituted the fabric of France's imperial project. As a result of these multiple shifting and interwoven factors, French feminists developed widely divergent critiques of imperialism and of its relationship to women's lives in France, its colonies, and the wider non-European world. Although these three activists held distinctly different political stances, Audouin's liberalism, Auclair's Republican socialist feminism, and Manck's revolutionary socialism, their foci intersected in gendered institutions that shape women's lives. They all took a strong interest in marriage law and custom, and particularly in polygamy. While a broad range of politicians and thinkers had long used women's status as a metric of civilization, feminists approached such judgments with different metrics, tools, and goals. Plural marriage emerged as a site of gendered and racialized analyses not only of colonial culture and law, but also through persistent comparison of the metropole. Criticisms of the sexualities, love, and law of polygamy formed the bases of these feminist critiques of the sexual politics of marriage in France. More broadly, these critiques contributed to feminist efforts to reconceptualize Frenchness. During the final years of the Second Empire and the opening decades of the Third Republic, Olympe Audouin wrote extensively about marriage and divorce law and customs in her travel accounts and publications, comparing those of France to those of the nation's colonies and cultures she visited. In her first book, the 1863 Les Mystères du Sarai et des Arames Turcs, Audouin praised many features of Turkish life, a world which countered many of the stereotypes and presumptions with which she had arrived on her 1858 trip. Overall, Audouin presented an exceptionally positive view of Turkish law, contending that, quote, there is not another country where women are more effectively legally protected than in Turkey. Her stance did have a distinct limit, however, in terms of the legality and practice of polygamy, labeling it, quote, the plague of the Orient. She blamed the tradition for, quote, having prevented and continuing to prevent Turkey from taking its place among the finest nations of the world, close quote. Audouin contended that despite being a, quote, rich and fertile country with intelligent, courageous, even brave inhabitants, Turkish arts, industry, and civilization, close quote, lack because powerful and wealthy men, the leaders of the society, have harems. Making no claim of immorality, Audouin instead argued that, quote, the softness, the voluptuousness of the harem causes them to lose all their energy and often their intelligence. They end up brutalized, close quote. Enveloped in the feminine, elite Turkish men lost their vital masculine power. For Audouin, Turkish femininity was deformed by plural marriage. Quote, how can a woman love a man who treats her as a toy, Audouin asked, a piece of luxury furniture? No, she does not love him. Or if she does, she loves him en femelle, like a female animal, and not en femme, like a woman. Polygamy thus deprived Turkish men of the sort of love, a Western or French love, that would support and motivate them, that would allow them to, quote, feel themselves sustained by an invisible force. He, the Western man, becomes great because he wants to place his glory at the feet of the one who loves him, close quote. This love, supported by law, exemplified Frenchness. Audouard considered this idealized, deeply gendered relationship as representing the proper and natural human sexual affiliation, the one rooted in Catholicism and in her French nation. In sharp contrast, polygamy meant that, quote, the Turk thus only loves women with a sensual passion, one far from rendering man strong, energetic, brave, close quote. The acceptance and practice of polygamous marriage damaged not only Turkish women and men, from Audouard's perspective, but also the global success and status of the Turkish nation. Paul Menk advanced similar sentiments regarding polygamy in Algeria in the 1880s. Unlike Audouard's otherwise positive perceptions of Turkish life and law, however, Menk presented a deeply negative portrayal of Algerian Muslims' lives, writing, quote, among the people in a state of infancy or of senility, the Algerian tribes hold pride of place, close quote. Menk's low estimation arose especially from her critique of women's status in marriage and the practice of polygamy. Like Audouard, Menk interrogated plural marriage's effect on both love and femininity. She questioned the romantic legends of Des Amours Arabes, saying, quote, we do not believe it. The Arab woman does not love in the sense that we give the word in Europe. Polygamy kills the flower of delicacy in her, the infinite tenderness that is the complement of love. The man has a female animal, a femelle, who gives herself to all of his desires. Close quote. She considered real European love impossible and saw femininity deformed because of polygamous conjugality. Terming Algerian women's condition slavery, Menk blamed it on Algerian men and on Islam. As a revolutionary socialist feminist, Menk challenged existing hierarchies not only of gender, but also of class, governmental power, and religion. Her Algerian propaganda tour focused primarily on anti-clericalism as well as on anti-imperialism. Expanding beyond her usual metropolitan target, the Catholic Church, she spoke against Islam and the men who practiced it. Ascribing Algerian Muslim men with sexualized authoritarianism, Menk asked of their status under French rule, quote, why breathe ideas of liberty, of dignity to these men who perhaps do not dream of it, close quote. A somewhat paradoxical question for a woman opposed to imperialism. Writing a decade later, Hubertine Auclair also linked the public and the private in her condemnation of polygamy. She insisted that it perverted conjugal love and created, quote, a perpetual state of war in the house of a man with multiple wives, close quote, creating the antithesis of a peaceful and loving domestic sphere. Auclair felt it necessary to inform her readers that, quote, the French must know that polygamy revolts the Arab woman. Auclair believed that plural marriage transformed decent young Arab women into vicious, competitive criminals. She feared that metropolitan citizens, unaware of the social realities of this conjugal form and holding anti-Muslim prejudices, would assume that these characteristics and behaviors were natural to Arab women and that they were satisfied with such domestic relations. Auclair attempted to give voice to Algerian Arab women to demonstrate the human, not only feminine universality of their emotion. She wrote, ask them about love and they will respond, love, it is a quick look. It is the embrace of arms and hands. It is a kiss. But once the man is married, it is finished. Finished. She described plural marriage as the death knell of love. Like Audouard and Menk, Auclair asserted the impossibility of love in polygamous relationships. Adding to her condemnation, Auclair maintained that plural marriage led to homosexuality and even bestiality because of the shortage of women. Concerned with the enforcement of heterosexual gender norms as a central element of Frenchness and troubled by the aberrant possibilities of imagined Arab sexualities, Auclair argued that because wealthy men wedded multiple women, poor men were left, quote, to take men for wives, close quote, or were found, quote, in criminal conversation with a goat or a sheep, close quote. Auclair saw this as another example of polygamy pushing Algerian Arabs, both women and men, into what she understood as unnatural relationships, and she contended that these undermined the social and familial fabrics.
By allowing the perpetuation of legal polygamy, Clairaut charged the French government not only shirked their responsibilities to the colonized population, but also simultaneously undermined its own interests. She avowed, quote, "The Arab race, so beautiful and gifted, is absolutely scorned by the Europeans, who are rarely as beautiful and or possess as many natural aptitudes as the Arabs." And here's the contradiction. The French vanquisher says to the Muslim, "I scorn your race, but I abase my laws before yours." The Republic, unless it contradicts its own principles, cannot continue to encourage polygamy and child marriage on one side of the Mediterranean and punish it on the other. Close quote. Accusing the Republic of a contradictory set of resentments, repressions, and exceptions, Eau Claire attacked France for maintaining separate and inconsistent sets of legal codes in Algeria, implying that at least part of the French colonial repression arose from the politics of resentment in her characterization of Arabs as both more beautiful and able. She pointed to the incongruity of France dominating and denigrating Algerian Muslims while simultaneously allowing populations... allowing the perpetration of particular aspects of their legal codes, specifically in the area of personal status, which included allowing polygamy. As a Republican socialist feminist, Eau Claire had great faith in the French Republic's capacity for justice and equality. Arguing that the Republic held the right and the power to supersede the Algerian legal structure allowing polygamy, Eau Claire maintained that such an act would both liberate the Muslim population and end this aspect of Republican hypocrisy. In an 1891 essay titled Polygamy en France, Eau Claire wrote, quote, "To unify itself, France must apply the same law on all of its colonial and metropolitan territories. Claiming that race and sex are the reason for two sets of law is as ridiculous as claiming that race and sex are the reason for applying two sets of morals. We have forbidden human sacrifice on all French territory. We must also forbid sacrificing love to the debauchery that is polygamy." Close quote. Algeria's conflicting legal codes were a legacy of Ottoman rule, which ended when France won military control in 1830. The French inherited and modified the Turkish millet system, in which minority religions, in the Ottoman context, Jews and Christians, had independent legal authority over their own communities for matters of personal law, including marriage. Under French law, Muslims and Jews constituted minoritarian groups, subject respectively to Quranic and rabbinic law and courts. In 1830, the newly established French military authority made a dramatic promise to respect religion, property, and trade in the colony. The pledge held no legal authority, but for decades it did influence debate. It also directly contradicted the ideas of French universalism and the unifying concept behind the Napoleonic Code. A philosophical and political struggle ensued between those seeking to minimize cultural differences between Algeria and France and those who sought their emphasis. The latter ultimately prevailed. While France extended its penal code to all of Algeria in 1841, the next year it confirmed the perpetuation of Islamic and rabbinic courts over authority, over civil issues in each of those communities, both of which permitted polygamy. As Judith Circus has shown, some of Algeria's French military rulers viewed Quranic law pragmatically. Contending that it could be used to promote France's agenda of moralization and domination, these officials argued that by revealing to Muslim women the extent of rights they had under the Quran, they could spark social reform. Circus quotes Charles Richard, an officer of the Bureau Arabe and a prolific chronicler of Arab Algeria, who in 1850 maintained that women, quote, "astonished that they have these rights, might consider asking for all of them, and she will be quite surprised to learn again from us that she can suppress polygamy, which is her cruelest enemy." Close quote. Quashing polygamy along with other old barbaric customs, Richard declared, quote, "Woman liberated will especially elevate the dignity of man," close quote. He referred to women's relatively extensive rights under the Quran while relying on Western assumptions of women's natural position of moral superiority vis-a-vis men. Using women's status as a metric of society's level of civilization reached back as far as the Scottish Enlightenment, and 19th century European imperialists often argued that exposing non-European women to Western ideas
could elevate the entire culture civilizational plane. In contrast, Richard, who, Patricia Lorsin points out, underscored Arab men's sexual immorality and women's resultant degradation, nonetheless asserted that Algerian Muslim women could find freedom from within their existing Quranic rights, if informed of these rights by the colonizers. In turn, Arab women could lift the developmental culture of their developmental level of their culture. Richard promoted an associationist view of imperialism, one in which the colonizer allowed indigenous institutions, including marital law and custom, to persist. In these early decades of Algerian colonization, however, assimilationist goals predominated. France's traditional colonial theory, assimilation sought the subsumption of indigenous institutions and their ultimate replacement by those in the metropole. Correspondingly, the colonized people would concurrently be civilized and made French. As the century progressed, the understanding of the impossibility of assimilation took hold amongst French elites. Auclair opposed this position. Covering the 1891 Senate debates on Algerian Arab assimilation in her feminist newspaper, La Citoyenne, Auclair criticized Senator Rémy Jacques, a representative of Oran, Algeria, for terming the Arab woman, quote, an obstacle to assimilation even greater than the Quran, close quote. She reported that Jacques continued, however, by insisting that, quote, we must change the situation and elevate la femme arabe, close quote. Auclair responded by saying, quote, that is what we ask. The question of la femme arabe is clearly, as we have seen, the core of the Algerian question. When one ends arranged marriage, sequestration, and polygamy for the Arab woman, assimilation will be possible, and France will have 3 million more children who will love it with a passion, close quote. Auclair, a strong advocate of the French Republic, saw assimilation as key not only to Algerian Arab happiness, but also to France's stability and legal and moral consistency. She placed marriage central to this problem. While most assimilationists considered both Muslim women and religion as the primary barriers to assimilation, Auclair instead saw patriarchal traditions as the problem. She believed that once French colonial authorities recognized the deleterious effect the Arab personal status laws had on Algerian Arab women and acted to terminate the inequitable marriage practices allowed under those laws, Muslim women would become assimilable, and through them, so too would their entire culture. She understood the legal perpetuation of inequitable gender and racial practices as the true bar to assimilation and colonial success, as well as to France's progress towards its universal ideal. Auclair's view on assimilation contrasted with Mink's implied essentialism concerning what they both saw as the grave problem of polygamy in Algeria. Audouin's legalism led her to both lay blame for and see remedy from polygamy and legal reform. All three women interrogated institutions shaping women's lives in colonial milieus, approaching them from multiple perspectives with differing yet intersecting goals. Deeply concerned with conjugal laws and customs, they all focused on plural marriage, reviling its influence on love, sexuality, and femininity. These critiques reflected back on France and its allowance of polygamy in its colonies as part of its maintenance of separate religiously based personal status law codes. Simultaneously, the feminists' analyses allude directly or indirectly to the overarching presence of France's profoundly patriarchal marriage law, one enabling a French polygamy, or at least non-monogamy. Addressing law, tradition, and empire, each author combined them in different ways to reconceptualize Frenchness in empire and metropole. Thank you.